This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, the genuine, the original. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
That's right, baby. Here we are, what, just a couple of days away from the new year, from January 1st, and we are talking sports with you this afternoon. 12 to 1, Gas House Gang. It's Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji. Hello and welcome into the show. 314-436-7900 to text us if you want to do that. We will take voice messages too from the Odyssey app. And if you want to watch us on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter at the KMOX Sports page, you can do that. You can comment directly from there. And we'll try to get to as many of your comments as we possibly can. Bernie, here we are, almost at the end of the year. New Year's Eve is tomorrow, and we've seen the Cardinals make a couple of moves. We've seen them do a couple of things here. The Sonny Gray trade started things off, but I think I'm getting a sense from people, even though the holidays are here and they're distracted by the holidays, there's still this sense of, man, when are the Cardinals really going to get busy? When is more stuff going to happen? And what do you think?
I think Tom Bloom's handling this just right. First of all, Nolan Arenado, there's not a market for him. So I'm not sure what he's supposed to do there. Mm-hmm. It's really, really difficult finding a match for him. Now, that'll ease up a little bit when some of the third basemen that are on the market come off the market, like especially Alex Bregman, but there are others. When we see where Eugenio Suarez signs, things like that. So there might be some openings later, but they're not there now. So I don't know where he's supposed to put Arenado unless they would just want to buy him out, which they say they're not going to do. As for Brendan Donovan, I totally get it because he's got so many teams that are sort of nipping at the bait set in the water, and they keep circling back and they nip at the bait again. And so he's just trying to maximize a deal he can get rather than rush into something, because there will be a time where there'll be a greater need for a guy like Brendan Donovan based on some movement in trades and free agent market that will make Brendan Donovan even a more valuable trade piece. So, there's no need for him to rush into trading Brendan Donovan. If he wants to trade him, he'll be able to find a really good deal. If he doesn't want to trade him, well, I think he does. But, you know, him coming back is not the worst thing that could happen, but I don't think it'll come to that.
Well, I thought this was interesting because Chaim Bloom has already dealt with the Boston Red Sox a couple of times. You know, the Wilson Contreras deal, the Sonny Gray deal, and then Alex Spire a couple of days ago out of Boston suggested that there's some interest there in Brendan Donovan. And we were sort of joking about this that, oh, I guess we'll just keep calling Boston and making trades with the Red Sox since Bloom has a familiarity with that organization. And I think we were all sort of in agreement, Bernie, that, you know, I don't really care who he deals with as long as he's getting the best deal. And if it happens to be the Red Sox, fine. But maybe if that's the only team he ever deals with for the next few years, then we can start criticizing that.
Well, you know, based on what the reports and the intel I have of what the New York Mets offered for Contreras, there's no question whatsoever that Chaim Bloom made his best deal by going with the Red Sox. And the interest in Contreras was kind of, it was out there, but it wasn't aggressive as Boston. I mean, Chaim Bloom, what he wanted from Boston, he got. So to your point, I really don't care that it's Boston. I do care that he got the deal that he wanted. And I do think if they're going to trade Donovan to Boston, I think Chaim Bloom, you know, especially after offloading some money to help those first two deals with Boston, with Sonny Gray and Wilson Contreras, combined $28 million, I think the Red Sox owe him a little bit. And I think if they're serious about wanting Brendan Donovan, I think Chaim Bloom can actually be pretty – he can hold off and remain firm because, listen – there's a lot of guys that he drafted that are on the Red Sox club now, or they're on the cusp of the major leagues, and they're highly regarded prospects. He might be able to get hands on a couple of those guys that not only will make the Cardinals better long term, but could make them better as in terms of what they look like in 2026. There's some thought that maybe Christian Campbell, who was a top five prospect in all the major leagues. He broke into the majors with the Red Sox last year. And like a lot of young players, I mean, his first trial in the major leagues, he didn't put up good numbers, but that happens quite a bit. But if you look at his numbers in the minor leagues and at AAA, I mean, the guy's a really exciting player, and he can also play middle infield. He can play some outfield. So I'll see what he, you know, I want to wait and see what he comes up with. But his price on Donovan, especially for the Red Sox, should be a really high price. I'd be disappointed if he settled for something that maybe we would all perceive as to be kind of below expectations. So we'll wait and see.
You know,
I still think Seattle's a great matchup, though. So
yeah, and I'd like to you know, see how you feel about this, because my feeling on Donovan is as follows. When it comes to the third base market, for example, you know, if a team misses out on Bregman or Suarez or something like that, then there might be this, well, we have to go with Arenado. And I'm just throwing him out there as an example, mm-hmm. because you can miss out on that market. It seems like Donovan's market is its own thing. Does that make sense? That it's its own thing, that the people, there's nobody more sought after who plays that role than Brendan Donovan right now. There's no other guy out there that I think teams would be more interested in than him. So he's probably at the peak for what he does as a player. That's my feel on it. So they could afford to wait. Whereas maybe in the third base market, you may not be able to wait. You might have to strike quickly if you're another team looking to acquire.
Yeah, I still have a feeling Arenado's going to end up with the Angels unless he doesn't want to go there. But I can't imagine he'd want to come back here. It's nothing against St. Louis. But it's just the situation.
It's
and it would be a big problem if he's back in St. Louis, because, you know, you want to play J.J. Weatherholt at second base. There's some thought that he could also play some third base. I know fans will roll their eyes, and that's okay. But, you know, this group that has taken over the operation, the baseball operation, the Cardinals, they want to have a chance to get Nolan Gorman going, and what has been done in the past to them really doesn't matter. They're in charge now, and they have some ideas about how to make this better, and they want to try to make this better. And in a rebuild, why wouldn't you want to try to make it better? Would you have a whole new set of eyes in terms of the people that are like, in terms of instructors and analytics and everything else? So I get that, but if Arenado's back, and I don't think he will be, but again, the longer this goes on, the more you wonder, you know, that blocks third base, not just for Gorman, but for some other players too. If they want to take a longer look at Thomas Cajasi, who finished, had a good final couple months of the 2025 season. It'll be a real problem. It also puts Ollie Marmol in a tough spot, because you know, he's going to be he'll have to be the guy to tell Nolan Arenado, well, listen, we love having you, but you do understand that you're not going to play all the time. You know, you may play 50% of the time. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't wish that on any manager, because I know people will say, well, that's his job. He's got to make the tough decision. Okay, I get it. That doesn't mean that it's easy for a guy to do. It would not be easy for any manager to do. This guy's a future Hall of Famer. I talked to Earl Weaver, who benched Brooks Robinson, and he told me he cried. He said it was the toughest thing he had to do, the greatest defensive third baseman in history at that time anyway, and an icon in that city. He had to take an aging Brooks Robinson out of the lineup, and he said after he had the meeting with Brooks to tell him that, Earl Weaver closed the door and cried like a baby. But he had to do, you know, but he did it. But it's not easy to do it. These are not robots, right? These are people with you know, human connections, and they have loyalty to players that have helped make them help them to win a lot of games, things like that. You can't just cut off the human element of this. It's not easy to basically say to a superstar, former superstar, hey, sit on the bench. Sorry.
It is not easy at all. But I see the other side of it from the fan's perspective, which is... Yeah, you're right. It's not easy. However, that's why you're paid considerable money, is to make those tough decisions, even if it's emotionally difficult to do that. So,
well, yeah,
I have no sympathy for it. It's not that I have no sympathy, but I think people, many fans, don't have sympathy for it. My bigger concern is how players view that. Because if you're in the dugout and you look up to Nolan Arenado, you know, and you're a younger mm-hmm. player, or, you know, maybe you've been around for a little bit, but you know, as you said, that guy is going to be in the Hall of Fame. How can you take that job away from him, even though it's competitive and there are other guys in the dugout who want to play, right? I mean, how does the team look at it? How do players respond to a player being benched, even though he is a future Hall of Famer? That's my only concern, but I don't think it should be the main concern.
But he's not a Hall of Fame player now. He's not even close to being a Hall of Fame caliber player. So when does the point come where you honor the past, you honor his career, you have great respect and admiration for this life he's had in baseball? But for 2026, if he had any real value, teams would be lining up to get for him.
Right.
So why would you feel obligated to give him the kind of status and playing time and opportunity that the other 29 teams have no interest in doing? I mean, I you know, I don't get it. We have to, again, that's why I told you the Brooks Robinson story, because some of the greatest players in the history of the game are still some of the greatest players in the history of the game. But the last couple of years kind of rough, and it was, you wanted to kind of like turn your eyes away, you know, and Arenado at the plate is kind of like that now.
I would really like to know how much money the Cardinals are actually willing to eat to move that contract, because that's what it's going to come down to. They're not going to get a ton in return of value, but they're probably, in order to open things up for these younger players, you mentioned J.J. Weatherholt. In order to do that, I mean, you can't have the logjam, so you have to figure that out. I wonder what they're willing to eat in terms of contract.
I think a lot, maybe more than they wanted to. I know Chaim Bloom has just adamantly ruled out any idea that they'll just eat the entire thing and basically release Arenado. So that would leave them on the hook for $37 million. And I understand why. Well, why would he say, if it comes to that, we're going to release him? You can't say that, even if you did have some thought of doing it, because you lose any leverage you have in terms of trading him. Not so much for talent, because I think the talent they would get back in exchange would not be much at all. We're talking about long-range prospects and lottery tickets who you know, you'd have to be really lucky to get anything out of them. But if you let it be known to baseball media that, first of all, you wouldn't be graceless like that and say, well, if you have to release them, we have to release them. But if it also damages your control of the situation in your attempt to offload him on another team.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji today on the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com at 12:30. We will talk a little playoff football, which is coming up, NFL. We've got one more week in the regular season, which happens this weekend coming up, and then the regular season's over. Then it's the playoffs. And Chief Analytics Officer with FTN Fantasy, Aaron Schatz, is going to join the show. That'll be just after 12:30. This is the Gas House Gang until 1 on KMOX. Bernie Miklas on the Gas House Gang today, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. With you until 1 o'clock, Chris Ranji as well. And Bernie, we're talking a bit about the Cardinals and their offseason. Ken is watching us on YouTube. You can watch us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter every day at 12. And Ken wants to know, in regard to Dylan Carlson, so we're going back just a little bit here, but I think it does have some, you know, implications about where we are now and how far the Cardinals still have to go. And his question basically is, how much of that failure was his versus what was just poor development by the Cardinals? And again, we're going back in history here, really, to, you know, answer that question. But I think it does have some relevance now, just because the Cardinals have been bypassed by a lot of teams in the way they have developed talent over the years, and they have fallen behind, and there's a lot of catch up to play here.
Well, they're catching up in a hurry, because to me, the most underreported or under discussed topic related to the Cardinals in this offseason is the dramatic rise of their farm system. They're getting rave reviews from all the independent evaluators. MLB Pipeline put them on a list of teams that farm systems improved the most in 2025. Baseball America said the Cardinals are the most improved farm system in 2025, and they have the most improved prospect in Joshua Baez. Fangraphs has the Cardinals rated as the number one farm system in Major League Baseball. This is dramatic process. This is dramatic progress, and it didn't take long. So that's related to the question that we got, because we can talk about the past all we want. I mean, I can sit here and do a 48-hour marathon and talk about the past. But I also wonder, what's the point now? Because those people are gone. You have a whole new regime in place that's clearly doing a better job at this, which is why they're rebuilding. It's why they hired Highbloom, and it's why the DeWitts have pumped a lot of money into the player development system. But as for Dylan Carlson, frankly, it's not one or the other. I always thought it was the fault of both parties. I don't think the Cardinals did a good job of developing him. Maybe they brought him to the majors too soon, but I also know Dylan Carlson didn't do a lot to help himself. The Cardinals aren't idiots. They love Dylan Carlson, and they really wanted him to be great because they needed him to be great. They put him on strength. The problem with him is he was physically did not have the physical strength. He would run out of gas. His stamina was poor. His strength was poor. It affected his power. They put him on every program you can think of to gain weight, to gain muscle mass, and to keep the weight on, and he never could. And the other thing is, his dad is a really good baseball coach, and the Cardinals, and I think a lot of teams have run into this kind of thing, where daddy kind of gets in the way a little bit.
That happens a lot.
Daddy means well. It's his son. He certainly wants his son to succeed. His intentions are good. But if the Cardinals are suggesting one thing, but Dylan Carlson goes to daddy and daddy says, no, son, I don't think so. I think we got to do it this. So, again, it's easy to put everything on the Cardinals. It's just not always that simple. That's my only point.
It's funny you say that. I've talked to at least a couple of hitting coaches who have said, you know, over the years that one of their biggest challenges is not just the player himself and working with them, but it's also working against dad or working against high school coach or college coach, somebody that they have been familiar with before they got to the big leagues and still go back to. And when there's a different, set of goals or different philosophies from different coaches than your big league coach, then that creates a real big problem.
Right. And, if I could just add a quick follow-up, what the Cardinals' biggest error, I think, if that's the term, the biggest mistake or the biggest error that they made with Dylan Carlson, it was a pretty common mistake under the previous regime. They overrated how good he was. The Cardinals have had a really bad habit of overrating their own prospects. And we've seen so many examples of it. I think that's, from a Cardinal standpoint, I think that's the biggest mistake. But I saw mistakes and reported on mistakes in terms of Dylan Carlson himself just not being able to put weight and strength on and keeping it, and also getting contradictory advice from his father.
I do have confidence in this current regime, and some of it is newness, some of it is hope, I'm sure, but also there's a little bit of a track record there. So it's just an excitement to see what happens next. And all of this, and we have to keep this in mind, is contingent upon how much ownership allows Chaim Bloom to do of whatever his vision is. That's the reality of any professional franchise. A lot of GMs, presidents of baseball operations, personnel, whatever sport it is, they are working under ownership. And whatever ownership is willing to allow them to do, then they can do it. Some have more autonomy than others. So a lot of what Chaim Bloom is going to do here in the years moving forward will be in large part based on what he's allowed to implement. So how much that is.
I think he'll be allowed to implement quite a bit, because that's what that's what Bill DeWitt Jr. told him. That's also what Bill DeWitt Jr. told me. The Cardinals, contrary to public opinion, the Cardinals over the last 10 years, when they haven't been nearly as good as before, they had a top 10 payroll five times. They were number 11 one other time, and they were all but two seasons, they were above the major league average in payroll. They spent plenty of money. They just spent it really poorly. That's the problem. when they're ready to win again, they're not going to invest a lot of money right now, nor should they. That's what a rebuild is. But when they feel they got a chance to win again, Bill DeWitt will give Heimblum plenty of leeway. Now, for anybody that thinks they're going to spend with the Mets and the Dodgers and the Phillies and some of these other teams, well, all due respect, you're absolutely delusional. That's not going to happen, like ever. But the Cardinals will spend more aggressively when they feel they're in position to win. And that's Heimblum's word, and that's Bill DeWitt's word. And we'll see if they follow through on that.
It's the last week. Week 18 of the NFL season is coming up this weekend. We'll talk football with Aaron Schatz, Chief Analytics Officer with FTN Fantasy. He's a friend of the show, and he will be visiting with us next. And right now, you folks out there have an opportunity, and this is a good one, especially if you're a new customer to FanDuel Sportsbook, because the Sportsbook is up and running right now, and it has been for about a month, and a great offer for new customers. You can bet $5 with FanDuel and get $300 in bonus bets. That is, if you win your bet or lose your bet, it doesn't matter. You're going to get that $300 in bonus bets. So, football, basketball, hockey, as I mentioned, NFL playoffs are coming up here. We're about a week away, a little over a week away from that starting up. It's an exciting time in sports, and you can bet all of it on an app that is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Download the FanDuel app now. Go to FanDuel.com/Missouri. That's FanDuel.com/Missouri, and you can get in on the excitement, because guess what, Show Me State? It is time to play your game with FanDuel. 21 plus and present in Missouri. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. As I mentioned before the break, we are at week 18, getting ready for week 18 of the NFL season. That means after this week, we are going straight to Wild Card Weekend. It is one of the great sports weekends of the year, and it will happen at the beginning of January. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji, and it is time to go back to the guest line today. Aaron Schatz is the Chief Analytics Officer with FTN Fantasy. You can go to ftnfantasy.com. And Aaron is a friend of the show with us now on KMOX. Good afternoon, Aaron. How are you?
I'm good. I believe that's now called Super Wild Card Weekend.
Oh, well, yes, it is. It is very super. I love
forever,
it.
Forever, it will now be Super Wild Card Weekend.
It is such a fun time of the year, you know, and I know it happens right at the beginning of January. But, man, getting to those playoff games, having, I think it's six or is it seven games that we'll have on that day. Yeah, it's six. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, six games. It's a lot of football, so you better be ready to watch a lot of football, but it's usually very good football.
I'm going to jump ahead here, Aaron, and I want to give you the context. My partner and friend Chris Ranji is an avid Chicago Bears fan.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going to be the neutral guy asking you this question. How much of a threat are the Chicago Bears to win a game, maybe win more than one game, maybe win the NFC Championship? And what would prevent them, in your opinion, based on those great analytics at FTN, what would prevent them from making a run?
Well, the best threat is that if they are the 2 seed, they'll play the Packers at 7, and the Packers are kind of falling apart due to injuries. And so it's absolutely not out of the realm of question that Chicago wins a game in the playoffs. And this definitely seems to be anybody's year. I mean, my numbers have the Rams and Seahawks ahead of the rest of the league, but as we saw last night, the Rams can lose at any time, and the Seahawks, frankly, can as well. So it's really anybody's year. The Bears have been better in recent weeks. It's not a good defense. They don't have a good defense. You know, they do have a good offense, and that, you know, Caleb Williams, he misses guys sometimes. I think last week, like, Chris Collinsworth picked out, like, three different times that he missed open receivers, but he's got a cannon for an arm, so he's definitely a good quarterback. So they're in the mix, but I think they're kind of lower in the mix than some other teams, you know, especially the Rams and Seahawks.
You mentioned that second seed, and that is contingent upon them either beating the Lions this weekend or the Eagles losing against Washington, which seems unlikely, but I guess you never really know. So my question is about the Eagles, because early in the season, you know, they weren't looking like a recent Super Bowl champion. They were looking like a team that was anything but they have started to play a whole lot better. How dangerous are the Eagles right now, regardless of their seed?
The Eagles are talking about possibly sitting starters this week, so it's not ridiculous that they might lose to Washington. I think that they are a better team than the Bears, but not that much better because their offense is so stagnant. Their defense has been fantastic over the last few weeks, much like last year. Last year, their defense kind of didn't get the act together till week six. This year, they didn't really get their act together until week 10. But they've been one of the top three or four defenses in the league since week 10. So, again, they're in it, you know, like all these teams this year. I mean, other than the NFC South, whoever wins the NFC South, everybody else is basically in it this year. So, I mean, the Eagles are definitely part of the mix.
The AFC picture is so interesting because the Chiefs are out of the way. The Bills are fun to watch, but gosh almighty, they've got some holes in that team. They're certainly a contender. But I always – the one thing about the NFL, even though you have these dynasties like the Chiefs have been, it eventually shifts, and then all of a sudden you have some new blood, you know, entering the fray. Like this year, Jacksonville with 12 wins. New England with Drew May and Mike Vrabel, you know, them having an unexpectedly great regular season. Denver has been fun to watch. The Chargers are at least a factor. So there's a lot of new blood in the AFC, and I'm sure I missed someone, and I apologize. But of those teams I mentioned, Jacksonville, New England, Denver, maybe the Chargers in there too, who do you think has got the most going for them? Who's the most complete team?
Denver is – probably has the most going for them because they're the one seed. Jacksonville, believe it or not, is probably the most complete team out of those teams because their offense has been playing so good since they picked up Jacoby Myers. And believe it or not, they have a top 10 defense and top 10 special teams this year by my rating. So whereas the Patriots are almost all just Drake May, and the Chargers are very heavily just Justin Herbert, and Denver is super heavily defense, Jacksonville is actually the most balanced team.
You know, other than the Rams and Seahawks, it is the Patriots. They've got the best point differential this season, and they sit there at 13-3. And I don't know what it is, but when there's this feeling that they can't possibly be this good, which is probably the feeling a lot of people have about the Bears. They can't possibly be 12-4 good or 13-3 good. And that's where the Patriots are. Is this an unusual season for Drake May and the Patriots, or do you think that this team really is legit and so is he, and he's probably going to win the MVP?
I think he is legit. Their defense is not. They have played the third easiest schedule of the last 47 years. Now, the only two teams with easier schedules made the Super Bowl, the 91 Bills and the 99 Rams. So it doesn't mean they're, like, not a factor. But part of the reason why their stats are so good is, my God, if they played an easy schedule. They have not played a single game against a team in the top nine of my ratings. They've played two games against teams in the top 12, and that was the Bills twice. That's it. So... I mean, they have had it really easy this year.
Aaron Schatz with us from FTN Fantasy. And boy, I've been an admirer of his work for a very long time. Listen, this game Sunday night is compelling just simply because the Steelers are the Steelers. And it's been kind of your typical Mike Tomlin season. And Aaron Rodgers is the new thing in the mix. Baltimore has had a weird, weird season. I guess Lamar Jackson's going to try to play Sunday night. What do you see happening there? And can either one of these teams be saved in a way that really matters, where they can go into playoffs and actually make their mark?
If you, Aaron Rodgers is the new thing. If you liked Ben Roethlisberger as an old man who only threw short, you'll love Aaron Rodgers as an old man who can only throw short.
Right.
The Steelers and Ravens, in that this is anybody's year, the Steelers and Ravens have a shot. Whoever makes it out of that game and into the playoffs absolutely has a shot. Like I said, the only teams where they really don't have a shot, there has never been a team as bad as Tampa Bay or Carolina that made the Super Bowl. But Pittsburgh and Baltimore are better than that.
I'm sorry, I have a quick follow-up. I didn't mean to do that, Aaron. I apologize. Can I ask, can I get you to please bust a narrative, like break it into pieces, please? Because I know you're excellent at that. One of the, when the when the Steelers were starting to win some games, I read this everywhere, you know, national media, so to speak. It's like, wow, hey, you know, this time Mike Tomlin can take Aaron Rodgers into the playoffs. And he's got enough of that magic left where it's like, hey, watch out for Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. And like you said, he's the old Ben Roethlisberger. So what, like, I didn't understand where this narrative was coming from, because I watched a lot of Steelers games just to watch Rodgers, and let's just say I wasn't blown away.
Steelers ranked 22nd in pass offense in my DVOA ratings. There ain't no magic. There's no magic. I mean, they need DK Metcalf. That's going to be a problem this weekend, but he'll be back if they play in the playoffs. But, I mean, no, Rodgers doesn't have much left, man. I mean, you know, he makes smart decisions, but there were a couple of deep throws to Metcalf a couple of weeks ago, and we were all like, where did that come from? Because the rest of the season, nobody is throwing it short. The only quarterback who throws short more often than Rodgers was Dylan Gabriel, for crying out loud. Like, it's there's no magic there.
So, you know, we mentioned the Chiefs, and they were 5-5. The last time I remember looking, they were 5-5, and they were still the Super Bowl favorite, which is pretty remarkable. You usually don't see a 500 team that deep into the season being the betting Super Bowl favorite, but there they were. And now they've missed out on the playoffs. Andy Reid is apparently saying he is going to come back next year and coach again. I know there are questions about Travis Kelce and what he does at the end of the season. So what is your future projection of the Kansas City Chiefs? They still have that quarterback. They still are going to have a good coach. They missed out on the playoffs this year, but what do you see happening next year and beyond?
Rebound. They're going to rebound. Now, especially, obviously, a lot of this depends on when Mahomes is healthy. Is he healthy for the start of the season or not? But they were 12th in DVOA this year, despite being 6-10. One of the top 6-10 teams I've ever measured. And the fact is, most of the top 6-10 teams won at least 10 games the following year. Like, the Chiefs are absolutely going to bounce back unless Mahomes is out for half the year.
Aaron Schatz from FTN Fantasy. You can catch the all of his coverage, FTNFantasy.com. Feel free to go by there, and he is a friend of the show, and we appreciate him. Aaron Schatz, thank you for talking some NFL with us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Folks should come check out the site and the Stats Hub with all of our stats and all of our charting. It's good stuff.
Chief Analytics Officer Aaron Schatz with FTN Fantasy. Again, FTNFantasy.com. Joining us here on the show. And Bernie, I don't know what to make. The NFC is like wide open. It's just, you know, you asked that question about the Bears. I don't know what to think of them week to week. I do think they are good. Their defense stinks. They were also really sick over the weekend. They've been dealing with the flu, and guys were missing and playing sick. And so I don't know if it was a true representation, but every team is hurt now. Every team going on.
Gosh, the Bears are fun to watch. That was such a dynamic game Sunday night in San Francisco. And I was thinking to you while watching, I should have texted you. I know Caleb Williams missed some open guys. I thought Collinsworth went a little too bananas about that. Yeah. Quarterbacks miss the open receivers. Not exactly a first time occurrence. Anyway, the work that Ben Johnson has done in terms of breaking Caleb Williams down, so to speak, and trying to remake him as a quarterback in terms of doing what he's going to have to do to be a great quarterback in the NFL, you can see the lessons are sinking in. I mean, it's just been a marvelous thing to watch. And he's not all the way where he's going to be probably next year. So they've got a really bright future. But they're fun to watch. And yep. Just to see Luther Burden III running around,
awesome.
My goodness.
Yeah.
But Aaron's right. The defense scares me. It's just not very good. So I think that'll be their demise in the NFC playoffs if they're going to go out early.
And it probably defense would absolutely be the problem. But this is the first time, with the exception of, you know, the 80s when I was young and didn't understand the game as much back then. This is the first time they've had a quarterback head coach tandem that I thought was really, really good and promising. It's the first time. So I'm looking forward to seeing what those two guys do together, Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams. We'll see what happens here in week 18, see if they end up with the second seed or what. But as we hit the break here on the Gas House Gang, Bernie, tell everybody about our friends at Saliga. It's Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji for just a few more minutes before the Dave Glover Show happens right here on 104.1 FM KMOX. Bernie on the show, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. Hey, would you like to feel old right now, Bernie?
I am old. What are you talking about?
Go ahead. Yeah. No, you're not. How about this one? Tiger Woods is 50 years old today.
That's weird. Yeah.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah, it really is.
I know he's, you know, and now he's eligible for the PGA Tour Champions. But I don't know what it is about him, even though he has been around a long time. But it just feels like he's perpetually 30. You know, I don't know what it's insane when you think about that. Tiger Woods, 50.
In as much training as he does, I'm sure his body, however, would tell Chris Ranji, no, I don't feel like 30. You know, to say he's been through a lot, medically speaking, you know, in addition to that almost nearly fatal automobile accident, I mean, he's still omnipresent in that he just hovers over the game. You know, he's one of those guys it's even more than generational. It's kind of a forever thing. He will always just kind of float above the sport of golf, as just like when people talk about Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Ben Hogan, you know, guys of that nature, where they'll be talked about forever, period. Bobby Jones, you know?
Yeah.
So he's very, very special athlete in the times we've lived in over the last, when did he break through? 30 years ago?
Yeah.
25 years ago? Yeah. I mean, unbelievable career. But there could have been more. That's the one regret, because of the back problems, because of the injuries, because of the accident that he was in. And he did make a great comeback from that for a while. You know, to win in that Masters was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. But there could have been more, as great as he's been, in terms of the prolific nature of success on his career. But it ended too soon, given his age.
What's incredible about him is it's not just the dominance, because he, you know, he had that. And I'm not sure it's going to be a long time before there's another one like that gets the attention, that just demands the attention that he does. And I think back to when the PGA Championship was here, right before COVID happened, and man, like just the people following him on the course, wherever he was. And it was like a rock star walking through crowds, just a really impressive thing. And as much as people like, you know, Scheffler and Rory and all these other guys, they just don't have that. And I'm not sure that anybody will in our lifetime.
100% in agreement with you. We're all going to be waiting for the next Tiger. I think we're going to be waiting for a very long time.
Bernie Miklas, this was fun. We appreciate it. And are you back Thursday, or you get the day off because it's a holiday?
I do get the day off Thursday.
Good for you. When are you back on the station?
Probably next Monday. Right. Yeah, with the Gas House Gang, with the Rush Hour at 5 o'clock.
All right.
Dave Glover before that. Yeah.
Enjoy your time off, man. Happy New Year
you
to
too.
You.
whatever time off you get, same deal, buddy. I love working with you. Thank you.
You too, my friend. That is Bernie Miklas. I'm Chris Ranji. Appreciate you listening to the Gas House Gang, which does come back tomorrow. Just won't have us. It'll be at 12 o'clock. We hope you'll be back and listen to it. Have a terrific new year. We'll talk to you soon. It has been the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.